This is the Blaze Radio on demand.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank account, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problems now by calling the experts at Tax Mediation Services
at 800-600-1645. That's 800-600-1645. 800-600-1645.
The more the world changes, the more we find comfort in things that never change. Never change. This is Rabbi Daniel Lappin on demand on the Blaze Radio Network.
Welcome, everybody. I am your rabbi, welcoming you to another edition of the Rabbi Daniel Lappin Show. And, don't ever think that just because we're talking about how the world really works, don't for a moment think that you are not receiving the most up-to-date information, the most relevant data that you could possibly be getting. Let me give you just one little example. Those of you who are regular listeners to the show, and I sincerely and devoutly hope that that is everybody, we'll remember the last show before this one. That show posted on December the 3rd, 2016, 12/3/2016. And it is entitled, Skilled Doctors Help Many More Murderers Walk Free Than Lawyers Do. And you'll remember that the theme of the show was that politicians will often tell you how the murder rate has gone down, and you think to yourself, this is great, they're doing a terrific job making our cities safer. And what I discussed in that particular show was that no, in fact, the number of murderous assaults that have taken place around America is much higher than it was in any previous year. Higher! It's just that fewer of them turn into murder charges. Why? Because of the speed of emergency medical technicians' response, EMT response, ambulance response times, the incredible advances in emergency and trauma medicine. Part of it is the result of America's wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, where unfortunately American medical technology has had to deal with some horrific cases, and that has translated to progress on the civilian arena, where today somebody brought in with gunshot wounds stands a far better chance of survival than he did even just a few years ago. So as a result of that, the person who tried to kill him, but it was only the skill of the doctors that saved him, well, that person who tried to kill him, who would have been up for murder because that was in his intention, and it was certainly the wounds he inflicted, but now because of the skill of the doctors, that person is up just for a simple assault charge. And so when you look at the statistics, yes, murder rate is down, you're quite right. Assault rate, much higher. Okay, this is all what I told you last week in considerably greater detail, and I thought it was something you did need to know. It was certainly something that I hadn't realized, and as soon as I became aware of it and our team researched that and found out what was really going on, I brought that to you. But I urge you to note the date. The date that posted was December the 3rd, 2016, which means, of course, that I prepared the show a few days before that. Meanwhile, a few days after the show posts, December the 7th, 2016, December the 6th. So 3 days after the show posts, the Chicago Tribune runs a story entitled, Have Chicago Politicians Gone Fetal? Meaning just curled up in a little ball and ignoring the world. And it was written by a man called John Kass, K-A-S-S. And what he says is basically that he cannot get black caucus politicians in Chicago. The city cannot get those people to be willing to clamp down on gun violence. Leave it for another time as to why that is. But he says street gang violence in Chicago is as bad, if not worse, than the record-setting death years of the 1990s. And he says, and there's simply no penalty for Democratic politicians who sit back in the Democratic city and do nothing to compel tougher sentences for gun crimes to keep the most aggressive shooters off the street. Some say this is a gun issue, but that's a con job. There are many guns in the suburbs, yet suburbanites aren't slaughtering each other. This is a street gangs with guns problem on the south and west side of Chicago. And calling it anything else is a distraction to give cover to the politicians. Then he goes on and he says, and what about the politicians who do nothing? They really have nothing to lose and they're doing just fine. But Chicago's top cop is trying to get politicians to act and he's mostly alone. Now, I'm no fan of mass incarceration or disproportionately arresting a minority, Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson said at a city club breakfast on Tuesday in a discussion with Cook County Sheriff Tom Dodd. But the simple fact is this, Johnson said, if you pick up a gun and shoot somebody, I don't care how you wrapped, black, brown, polka dot, psychedelic, I don't care, you should go to prison. It's as simple as that. And Johnson was at the City Club to continue his push for a state law that would increase sentences for gun crimes. One intriguing feature, if a judge wants to shower the guilty shooter with mercy at sentencing, that judge must put his reasons in writing. But the Illinois Black Caucus in Springfield didn't like it. Judges weren't too crazy about it either, so nothing has been done. In Chicago, there is no political advantage in Democrats calling out the lawmakers who do nothing. Democrat Mayor Rahm Emanuel cannot call out the legislative Black Caucus. He's still trying to rehabilitate his political image with black voters after the Laquan McDonald fiasco. Democratic political boss Mike Madigan won't because he needs caucus members, so the slaughter in Chicago continues. Back in August, when Johnson began to push for tougher sentencing and demand a change in the law, he sat down with me to explain it. There were 472 murders in Chicago then. That is summer 2016. The other day, meaning just before December the 6th, 2016, Chicago surpassed 700 murders, which sounds pretty bad. It is bad. But murders don't tell the true story of violence. The true number is the shootings. And by shootings, I don't mean people firing guns into the air. I mean people pulling triggers to send bullets to penetrate human bodies. In 2014, there were just about 3,000 shootings in Chicago. So far, by December 2016, there have been more than 4,100 people shot. And we've got almost a month of homicides and shootings to go. John Cass is writing this on December the 6th. So back in 2014, 3,000 shootings, now 4,100 people shot, but many people survived. Fact, now here's what he says, okay? Factor in the brilliant advances in emergency medical technology and dedicated Chicago Fire Department paramedics and the fine work of hospital emergency rooms and trauma centers, and you can make a terrible argument. It is the argument that Chicago violence now is as bad or worse than it was in the early 1990s, when in each of those 3 years, more than 900 people were murdered. Because with more than 4,000 shootings this year, it's reasonable to assume the 2016 homicide total would be well more than 700 by this point if it weren't for modern medical techniques and the paramedics. So there you got it. It turns out that I was cutting edge last week, and it really is relevant. So hopefully I brought you something of real value over there. We are going to proceed, and what I want to talk about for the moment is why I gave advice to a man to propose to someone else's fiancé. What? That's right. Jennifer was engaged to be married to Tom, and I told Jerry to go ahead and propose to her. Why would I have done that? Don't I believe in the guy code? Well, I'll explain that in just a moment. But first of all, my website, RabbiDanielLapin.com. RabbiDanielLapin.com. And look, if you are interested in expanding your financial revenue program for the coming year, for the next 12 months, then if you haven't got this book in your arsenal, may I recommend you include it? And I think you'll find it as valuable as the many hundreds of people who've actually taken the trouble to write to me and to thank me. As a matter of fact, and not this is not a suggestion at all, but somebody, one particular person, sent in a very large contribution. Well, I'll tell you what, it was actually $1,000 to the American Alliance of Jews and Christians, an organization I serve. And he made that contribution in my honor, which I appreciate very much indeed. And what he said was that that represented a small portion of his increase in earnings after applying the principles that he learned in the book Business Secrets from the Bible. And and I've received many, many very, very wonderful letters, which is why I have no compunction at all about making you aware. If you're not yet aware of it, please go to RabbiDanielLapin.com and look in the store section for Business Secrets from the Bible, and go ahead and order it. You'll get it pretty quickly, and you'll be able to begin building its strategies. And there are 40 crucial strategies in that book. You'll start building them into your revenue program. And look, you might say, well, I'm not in business. I'm an employee. I work for the city. I'm a teacher. I'm a plumber, whatever it is. No, you don't understand. One of the first things that the book explains is how important it is for you to begin to see yourself as an entrepreneur, regardless of where you work or what you do. Yes, of course, you might be an employee. Maybe you're unemployed. You still want to think of yourself as being your own businessman, owning your own business. When you start seeing yourself as the one who is chiefly responsible for your financial success, not your employer, not anyone else, that is step number one, and I teach you how to accomplish that. At any rate, that's called Business Secrets from the Bible. You'll see it at my website, RabbiDanielLapin.com. Quick break, and then let's talk about what does it mean when you get engaged? I'll be right back.
Spilling ancient solutions for modern problems in the areas of family, faith, friendship, and finance. This is Rabbi Daniel Lapin, on demand on the Blaze Radio Network.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank account, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problems now by calling the experts at Tax Mediation Services
at 800-600-1645. That's 800-600-1645. 800-600-1645.
Rabbi Daniel Lapin returns with more of how the world really works on the Blaze Radio Network On Demand.
Back again on the Rabbi Daniel Lapin Show, where I very much appreciate your participation. And to all of you who have helped promote the show and get it around and introduced new listeners to the show, my heartfelt appreciation. Your efforts have borne fruit, and we continue to grow, and that stimulates me greatly, so I appreciate it. Okay, look, one of my concerns, and you'll understand that not only because I have six daughters do I tend to worry more about women than about men, but also because in the nature of things, it makes more sense to worry about women more than we worry about men. It's not an accident that the code of the sea for a long time has been women and children first. Now, in previous shows, we've discussed the validity of that and where it comes from, but at least it does show that there is a sentiment in the heart of most people that women and children go first. It makes sense for a man to hold open the door for a woman. It makes a lot less sense for the woman to hold a door open for the man. There is there's a very genuine recognition that women are the weaker sex. Now, of course, you're not supposed to say things like that anymore today. And the truth is, it's not necessarily true in terms of in terms of resilience and emotional strength and spiritual strength and durability in all of those areas. Obviously not, but equally obviously, in terms of physical strength, there is no question about it. I don't have to take up your valuable time now to talk about the need to modify the physical tests in organizations such as various fire departments and various military departments that, for political reasons, have been extremely eager to induct women. They've obviously had to change those physical requirements. You know, you don't have to be a genius to know that, by and large, women do not have the upper body strength of men in terms of being able to walk mile after mile after mile with a 60-pound pack on your back. There's no comparison. Women are not men. In terms of the ability to climb flights of stairs in a burning building, carrying an enormous load of breathing apparatus and firefighting equipment on your back, you know, women are not men, obviously. So I make no excuse at all for saying that I'm more concerned about women, but it actually goes even a little further than that, because the fact is that in marriage, women put more on the line, as it were. In other words, when a woman throws her lot in and accepts a marriage proposal from a man, large parts of her life from then onwards kind of move out of her control. In other words, if the man's job is transferred to another city, she pretty much tends to pick up and go along. Now, look, yes, I know you know a couple, and I know a couple where the woman is the primary bread earner, and the couple and the family moves in accordance with the requirements of the woman's job. I get it. I understand that. But that's very rare. It's not the way things ordinarily go. It is usually the woman who moves into the man's orbit rather than the other way around. That is why, throughout Western civilization, the woman abandons her last name and adopts the last name of her husband. She's moving into that area. It's one of the reasons why, in small towns across America, you will still see on the boards above stores down Main Street, you will still see Smith and Son, you know, Jones and Son. The publisher that has published my book, Business Secrets from the Bible, is John Wiley and Son. This is very ordinary. But what is a lot less ordinary is to see a sign that says, Smith and Daughter. You know, local hardware store, you know, Jones and Daughter. Why don't you see that as often? Well, because Jones's daughter married Tom Smith, and so she's part of the Smith family now. That's kind of how it works. And another area in which, if you like, life isn't quite fair to women, or another area to explain why it is that I generally am more concerned about women than about men, is that, just to add this, that when you help a man's response is very often, and by the way, you'll see this with little kids as well, I can do it by myself. You know, I can help myself. A man's response is, to express his independence. It is actually harder to effectively lend a hand to a man. For a woman, on the other hand, a woman's femininity is enhanced. In other words, when somebody reaches out a hand to help, if somebody opens the door, for her that's a positive thing, less so for a man. A man's response is, well, you think I can't do it myself? And so there's that difference. And another difference is that time is different for men and for women. When a woman goes out with a guy for 5 years, I know a woman who went out with a man for 7 years, and that's not the same. In other words, for him, everything's fine. There's no problem. For her, every passing year, she's looking to get married, as most people are looking to get married and be part of a happy marriage. For her, every passing year makes the prospect a little harder because she's competing with her younger sisters. Okay, and again, some of you will say, well, you know, not everybody has to marry a younger woman. Fine, these are all very nice sociological observations, and they are attempts to impose the world of political correctness on the world of biology, and they are attempts to undermine how the world really works. The way the world really works is very simple, and that is that all things being equal, I would recommend that a man marries a younger woman rather than an older woman. I mean, why wouldn't you? It's now, all things being equal, right? In real life, things aren't always equal. The right woman who's a few years older is much better than a younger woman who's the wrong woman. A woman with the right character strength and the right makeup is obviously the critical and most important thing. But all things being equal, if you're a man looking to get married and you've got a choice of two women, or both equally wonderful women and lovely families and great characters and beautiful looks, you know, and one is 5 years older than the other, take the younger one. I mean, why is this hard to understand? And this simply means that that women who disregard the passage of time are being foolish. If their parents are not guiding them or advising them, sometimes young women don't take the advice of their parents, then maybe friends and mentors. But it doesn't make sense for a woman to fritter away her 20s, confident that whenever she actually does want to settle down, there'll always be a guy. Not necessarily true. And so in that sense, life is a little bit more difficult for women. And it bothers me very much when I see men who do not know if they want to get married. They certainly don't know if they want to get married to this woman, but they love being boyfriend and girlfriend, and they let the years go by. And it's not right. Not right when a man does that, because he's taking up the time of the young woman who could be using this time to already be getting married and starting her life. Now, some of you may be saying, "Oh, you know, Rowan, not everyone's life revolves around marriage." I'm not going to dignify that comment by a response. I mean, if that's what you genuinely feel, if you really think that marriage is irrelevant and it's just one of many different choices for how to live, then we disagree, and I also think that that taken in terms of how the world really works, I think you're on the losing side on that one. I think that you are a tiny minority of people who do understand that the world does revolve around hatch, match, and dispatch. Births, marriage, and death, they're kind of very basic things in the passage of a life, and that's one of the reasons that when we hear of somebody who, you know, somebody dies a little while ago, the great American astronaut John Glenn died. Wasn't it heartwarming when you discovered that he'd been married to the same woman for about 70 years? A really long time. And that they just had this, it just they were in love with one another for decade after decade after decade. Doesn't that warm you? Doesn't that say something good to you? Yeah, of course it does. It should. That's what marriage does. Do every single one of us have that good fortune in life? Of course not. Divorce is a sad reality, and some of the work I do is based on helping both men and women move on past divorce, stop seeing themselves as failures, and being able to pick up again and rebuild a life. Still, all of that by way of explaining that my concern is very often weighted in favor of the woman in a situation. Each person who chooses to get married tries to make the best marriage he can. Now, different people have different choices and different priorities, but let's say now a woman, a young woman has a, or any woman has a choice of two men who are, for all intents and purposes, the same, all things being equal, which, as we know, in the real world, they're not. Yes, caveat as always. But you know, here's a woman, and she's got two choices, both good-looking guys, both tall and well-built, and both of them are charming and kind, and they have good sense of humor, and all the good things, except one of them is ambitious, and he has a career plan, and you just know that that if nothing derails him, he is going to go ahead and be financially successful. The other guy is just a happy-go-lucky sort of guy, and he's not ambitious at all. He's happy doing what he's doing. Who would you recommend she marry, all things being equal? And this is, again, just for those of you who say, oh, money's not everything, you know. I didn't say it was. I said all things being equal. I said more important things. First, I listed the things that that he had. Not looks isn't necessarily the most important. Character is the most important. But all things being equal, would you not join me in advising this woman, hey, you know what, all things being equal, if you can be happy with both of them, my recommendation is marry the one who's ambitious. As time goes by, the one who's not ambitious will start driving you nuts. Even apart from the financial stress. Because right now he's happy-go-lucky. And by the way, people can change, and I understand there are many examples of guys who sort of go through their teen years and 20 years just as happy-go-lucky guys who sort of don't find their way and they don't really know what they're doing. I understand that, and then all of a sudden something clicks and away they go. It happens. And again, if a woman marries a guy with her eyes open and she's just confident that this is going to happen, then none of what I'm saying is relevant. But in a hypothetical situation where this is the given, that one is ambitious and going to move forward, the other is, you pick that one. Why? Because money is a factor. And a woman who wants to build a home and a woman who wants to raise a family, it's an enormous help to be married to a man. Okay, fine. Now, there are many women in this situation, and we've done a show on this in the past. What happens to a wonderful wife who's married to a lesser husband in these areas? And I've spoken about that, and I've written about that. All absolutely very important. No question about it. What is the main concern that I'm leading up to in terms of recommending to a fellow that he propose to a woman who's engaged to somebody else? All of this was by way of lead up to that, and I'll do that immediately after this quick break. Website, rabbidaniellapin.com. What we try and do on there, by the way, is we try and we have a little section called On Our Minds, where we comment on current events, things that are relevant. I don't do a lot of current events on the podcast simply because I know that the podcast is listened to many people months or even years after it was recorded, and I want to make sure that everything on the podcast is what we call evergreen, something that'll be just as useful a year from now as it is today. So current events are on the website, things that we're commenting on, and for the most part, things that you may have some desire to contact us, to ask a question, whatever it is, all of that at rabbidaniellapin.com, where you will also find business secrets from the Bible. It's many, many people have it. You may already have it. It's been an enormously popular book. But if you don't, then I think you would want it. And if not you, if you're sort of one of those folks who are sort of happy-go-lucky and you're just financially, you're just taking it easy, you're coasting along, then you probably don't need it. But maybe somebody you know does. And this is a book that if you don't get for yourself, you may want to get to give to someone else. Business Secrets from the Bible at RabbiDanielLappin.com. Back with you in a moment.
You're listening to Rabbi Daniel Lappin On Demand on the Blaze Radio Network. Find more at theblaze.com/radio.
Buck Sexton. Are you an action movie guy, and do you have a couple favorites?
I would say the one that I probably have cited the most in my life was The Matrix. I think the first Matrix was like...
I totally respect that.
Perfect.
That's in my top 10 for sure. Maybe even top 5.
The time that I saw it.
Yeah, and it actually was a cool storyline, and it was creative and interesting. Unfortunately, the second movie was like watchable, but sort of went off the rails. The third movie was an atrocity. I mean, the third movie should be banned by the Geneva Convention.
Buck Sexton. Weekdays, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on the Blaze Radio Network.
We now return with Rabbi Daniel Lappin On Demand on the Blaze Radio Network.
Good. Well, here we are back together again, the Rabbi Daniel Lappin Show. And the story that I want to recount, and I do so with some trepidation because every now and then somebody contacts me and points out that there is a whole discussion on some obscure corner of the internet about what a terrible person I am. Most recently, somebody showed it to me, and there was this whole discussion of people railing against me and to one another. Say, oh, have you heard of him? He's what a terrible guy. What was my big sin? My big sin was that I do not believe that recycling is the highest moral expression of human ethical autonomy in the planet on the planet today. And yes, that's absolutely true. But to these denizens of this obscure corner of the internet, there was a tremendous anxiety and stress about the fact that far too many people listen to this rabbi and he's promoting his evil ideas about recycling. And I said, yes, recycling is one of the sacred sacraments of the religion of secular fundamentalism. Again, I've covered it in other shows. I've explained precisely what my view is on that topic. But I have a feeling that this that I'm about to say is going to also explode in some forgotten section of the internet where people are, oh, can you believe what he said? And what is the story? What happened? There was a fellow who, and I'm gonna call him John. Okay, John was dating Jennifer. And it was sort of on and off and on and off. And to me, it seemed as if there was a connection there. But John never asked me any advice. He never consulted with me. And a rule that I pretty much follow is that I never offer unsolicited advice. The only exceptions, pretty much the only exceptions are to our own children, where occasionally, and even there, I'm cautious, by the way, they will all tell you that there have been times they wished I would have or they expected me to, and then afterwards they say, well, why didn't you tell us? And I, because you didn't ask me. I'm very serious about that. Unsolicited advice is usually unwelcome. And if I am going to take the time and the effort to give you advice based on ancient Jewish wisdom, which takes a little bit of work, I only want to do that if it means something to you. I don't want to inflict it upon you. And so I didn't, John never asked me anything. And eventually, Jennifer seems to be no longer dating John. She's now dating Jack. And, it was fine if Jack went, and Jennifer did speak to me occasionally and asked me a question on one thing or another. Then she starts seeing Jack. Jack never, and these were people who were involved in my congregation in California. So this is a couple of years back. And time goes by, and then all of a sudden, John comes to talk to me, asks for an appointment. I give him a time, comes in, And he is beside himself. I've seldom seen somebody so stressed and so dismayed. "What's the matter, John? I've made the biggest mistake of my life," he said. "I just somehow thought there was plenty time. I didn't have to worry. And I realize now I was stringing her along, and she did exactly the right thing. She sent me packing, and she started seeing somebody else. I don't know if you know, she's now dating Jack." And I say, "Not only do I know she's dating Jack, but I also know that they are going to be getting engaged this week." "Oh, no, I can't believe it." And he was so unhappy about it. He said, "I've never met anyone quite like her," he said. And he said, "If you want to come up out of your chair and around the desk and give me a kick in my rear end," he said, "feel free to do it, because you'll only be doing what I do to myself nonstop. I just kick myself constantly for having let her go." He says, "Do you know, I think she would have accepted me." And I said, "Yeah, I think she probably would have." And I knew, because Jennifer had been talking to me about her dating of John and then of Jack. So after a little while, he said, he asked me if there's anything I thought he could do. And I said, "Well, what do you think?" And he said, "I don't know." And he left. And then a few days later, maybe it was a week later, he called me up, asked if he can come over. He came over, I gave him an appointment, he came back. And he said, "Look, I've been thinking about my meeting with you, and I realized you never asked my question. I answered my question. I asked you if there's anything you think I can do, and you turned it around on me, and I didn't know what to do. And I've just been feeling so hopeless and so miserable about this that I just, in rethinking my conversation with you, I realized you never told me what you thought. Would you tell me whether there's anything I can do?" I said, "Well, ideally, in the best of all possible worlds, what would you like?" He said, "I'd like to be engaged to her. I'd like her to be engaged to me, not to Jack." And I said, "Well, as you know, they got engaged a few days ago, and he said, "Well, so that's it then." And I said, "Well, are you telling me or are you asking me?" He said, "No, I'm sorry, I'm asking you what you think." I said, "Well, in that case, I'll tell you what I think. In ancient Jewish wisdom, boyfriend and girlfriend is a zero status. It doesn't mean anything at all. It's nothing. In other words, if somebody wants to come to my party and I invite them and they say, "Can I bring my girlfriend?" I may say yes if it sort of fits the dynamics of the party. I may ask, "Well, how serious? How long have you been here?" But I don't feel any obligation at all. I mean, tough luck, you know, that's your girlfriend. By contrast, at the other end of the spectrum is somebody says, "Well, I don't know if you realize, but I'm married and I'd love to come to you, but I wouldn't go without my wife." And I say, "Oh, please pardon me. I had absolutely no idea. Of course we'd welcome you and your wife. I would never dream of inviting a husband without a wife, or the other way around, a wife without the husband." In one of my Bible classes, I had a Bible class in Los Angeles that was by invitation only. In other words, people couldn't just walk through the door, but you needed to be formally associated with a Bible class. And there were reasons for that we can talk about another time. But in Jewish community terms, it was a very large group. It was about 100 young people who used to meet once a week for a very serious 90-minute Bible study program with me. And there was a couple who began to worship in my synagogue whom I got to know. Very charming couple, and a very accomplished couple. He was a managing director of one of the large investment banks based in New York with an office in L.A., and she was very artistic, and she built a beautiful home and was raising a lovely family. And she asked if she can attend this Bible class. And I said to her, "Mrs. So-and-so, I would be honored to have you part of the class." And what I mean by that is that when I evaluate people for this Bible study program, I'm not only looking at people who can benefit from it, and again, not everybody could benefit from it. It's at a very high level, and you could certainly benefit from it, but I'm also looking for people who would bring something and add something to the class by their presence. Their insights, their spontaneity, their social skills. But you know, a Bible class is a dynamic living institution which is impacted by everybody who is there. So I said, I want you to know that you are totally acceptable. You'd be very welcome on both scores. I think you would be able to gain from it. I think you would also contribute and be part of it. I still have to say no. And she was shocked, and she said, what do you mean? Now, by the way, this is a woman who, because of her husband's position, has never, ever been told no about about anything. And so I felt bad about it. But I explained, I said, look, I have a policy of not admitting individuals who are married without their spouse. She said, why? She said, I don't do everything with my husband. He doesn't do it. I said, yes. But there are very few things you do that are as profound and as meaningful as Bible study on this level. And I promise you, it is going to impact you. It's going to bring about spiritual and intellectual growth. And if your husband isn't part of this, I will be doing the worst thing in the world. I'll be driving a wedge between the two of you. I will be bringing about a state of lesser satisfaction in your union than there is without me. And so I'm really sorry. I know you want to come, and I'll tell you, I wish you could come. I wish you would. But she said, well, my husband has no time. He's not interested. He can't commit to it. One of the things you had to do with this Bible study class was you had to commit very seriously to it. And she's far too busy. He's in New York very often. And I said, I'm really, really sorry. I would have loved for you to be part of the class. I respect you and your husband. And I can't do it. I just can't. Exception? No exception. Okay, fine. 3 days later, I get a phone call from the husband, and he asks if we can have lunch together, and he needs to speak to me. Well, obviously, I knew what it was about, and I obviously agreed, and we met at one of the several kosher restaurants in the city of Los Angeles. Actually, not in the city, but in the west of LA. And we sat down, and again, this is a very, very bright man. I mean, he's smarter than me, he's more accomplished than me. So I certainly had considerable respect for him, but at the same time, you know, I know my field, and so I was sort of ready. And he said, "Look, I heard you turn down my wife," and I said, "You know, please no." I did so terribly reluctantly, and I went through the whole explanation. I said it would be wonderful to have her from every point of view, but I believe it would be the wrong thing to do simply because of your marriage. So he stayed silent for what seemed like a very long time. It was probably half a minute or so, and he said, "What is involved?" If I were to join, I said, "Well, it's a commitment to be present." And he said, "That would be very hard for me because several times a month I have to be in New York, and I can't be sure that it won't correspond to the night on which your Bible study program meets." And this time I kept quiet. And it was hard. I kept quiet for half a minute. Why? Because I figured out, you know what, this man has succeeded because he knows how to solve problems. And if he wants his wife to attend the class to the point where he's willing to even consider making the same commitment himself, then he's going to figure this out somehow better than I can. And sure enough, after about a lengthy, lengthy half a minute of silence, he said, "Would you accept a speakerphone connection?" He said, "Your class meets from 7:30 to 9. New York time, that's 10:30 to midnight." He said, "I'm usually finished my meetings well before then. I'm in my hotel room. Would you be willing?" And I said, "Look, done deal. When you're in town, you'll be there." He said, "Yes. When you're not, you'll be." Well, we did that. And this couple became among our closest of friends. They were wonderful in this class. Both of them were so bright and so insightful. They had so many good ideas. And once or twice a month, There we would install, he set this all up. There'd be a big speakerphone set up, a very sophisticated microphone system in the room. And just before we began, I'd check the connection just before, and I always started very, very promptly. This class I started on the dot at 7:30, and at 7:29, I would always say, Ken in New York, are you there? And his voice would come booming back through the microphone. He said, Rabbi, I'm ready. And we'd launch, and away we went. And it was a really wonderful experience for me as well. It was very, very, the whole relationship became very uplifting. So I tell you all of that. So as you understand what I say when I make the point that boyfriend and girlfriend, no status at all. Married couple, total status. In between, engaged, an engaged couple. Actually, no. Engaged couple is not in between. Engaged couple is right there next to boyfriend and girlfriend. So if you imagine a spectrum line where one end of the spectrum is anchored by marriage, which is a total unification. And as I explain, I wouldn't dream ever of inviting only a husband or only a wife. They're a unit, they're a couple, they're together. And by the way, some parents do this. It's a terrible thing. Be very careful. If you have a child who's married, very often I've seen this thing happen where the parents of the boy will sometimes invite him over alone. Sometimes there'll be, you know, if there's a family business, they'll invite the son over, not the daughter. It's a terrible mistake. Not only are you driving a wedge between the couple because she's involved also, you're driving a wedge between her and you. So if you're the parents and one of your children is married, make absolutely certain that you never, ever again, after they're married, relate to your child. You, from now on, you relate to the couple, the two of them. And you, by and large, should not have secrets from them. Your relationship, you have to be very careful that, with very few exceptions, your relationship now has to be not with your child, but with your child and your child's spouse. And it's really, really important. So the right end of the spectrum, anchored by marriage. The left end, let's say 10, number 10 on the scale is marriage. Let's say number one half, a half on the scale is boyfriend, girlfriend. It's of no significance, no spiritual, no cosmic, no real significance of any kind at all. And engaged, yeah, maybe one or one and a half. It's way down at that level. So in other words, not a big significance on the engaged front. Now, there is something called the guy code. And I don't know if you know about the guy code, but I do. I'll tell you about that coming right back. The website, rabbidaniellappin.com. And you need to go there and get yourself a copy of Business Secrets from the Bible. There are also some other financial related material that is on sale, and you'll be able to take a look at all of that and really change the financial destiny for the next 12 months of somebody you care about. Maybe it's you. The point is, however, that this is a very serious program that really does change. It's not nothing significant happens overnight. So I'd be lying if I told you that giving somebody this book means that in 3 weeks' time they're going to be able to buy a Ferrari. That's just frivolous and foolish. But in terms of substantially and significantly changing their financial destiny over the next 12 months, oh yeah. That'll do it. Business Secrets from the Bible, and it is available at rabbidaniellappin.com. Of course, obviously available at other booksellers too. Back with you in just a moment.
The Blaze on Demand. This is Rabbi Daniel Lappin.
The Jeff Fisher Show.
New York, Boston, and Chicago and others have began using dry ice several months ago in an effort to reduce rodent population. People for the ethical treatment of animals stepped in, saying rodents deserve our protection. Dear at PETA, they're rats. PETA replied, at Jeffy, am I right? All animals deserve our consideration and protection, regardless of how you personally feel about them.
The Jeff Fisher Show, Saturday mornings, 9 to noon Eastern,
on the Blaze Radio Network.
Welcome back to Rabbi Daniel Lappin On Demand.
only on the Blaze Radio Network.
Your rabbi, that's me, Rabbi Daniel Lappin, and on we go with today's Rabbi Daniel Lappin show. Again, as always, my deepest appreciation to you for investing your time in this show. I know how precious your time is, and I really do take my responsibility of making sure that your time is used as effectively and as usefully as possible. I take that very seriously. So imagine a spectrum line, 1 to 10, if you like, a spectrum line of measurement of connection, unity. At the 10 end is marriage. At the other end, at like 0.5 or maybe 1, is boyfriend-girlfriend. And maybe 1.5 is engaged. In other words, from a spiritual perspective, in God's eyes, if you want me to use the natural biblical terminology, marriage is an enormous deal. It's the whole deal. Boyfriend, girlfriend, nothing. Engagement, nothing. It doesn't mean anything. Why is this so important to understand? Well, because I spoke a little earlier about how unhappy I am when I see a girl dating somebody for year after year after year. First of all, dating for a lengthy time in no way makes marriage a more likely outcome. Please, ladies, if you're a single woman and you're contemplating, please know that dating for year after year after year in no way makes it more likely that this guy one day is going to say, you know what, we should get married. Makes it not more likely at all. And so I get perturbed because I want to see, I want to see women, every woman, in a happy, fulfilled, beautiful marriage. I think it's tough to be a single woman in any time, in any place. I really do. And it's not just in modern day. You might, oh, well, today there's a woman can do everything for herself and she can get a job and she can do anything and be it. Yeah, I get that. It's all true. But life is about more than your job. Life is more about more than your social security. Life is about connections, and among the most primary and paramount of connections is family. And so it is hard for a woman not to have family. The overwhelming majority of women want to have children. And even women who at a certain stage in their life say, I never want to have children, very often change their minds. I have had more than one situation of a woman who married a man who'd had a vasectomy. And she said to me, oh, I don't care. I love him. I just want to be married to him. And she said, you don't see anything wrong with it. And I said, well, if you're asking me, all I can do is tell you that there's a very high probability that down the road you will desperately want children. Well, in two of the cases that I was involved in, that turned out to be the case. In one case, they divorced strictly over the issue of, I mean, obviously they tried to do vasectomy reversals. You can forget about that. That's rare. And in one case, they divorced because she wanted to marry someone who'd give her children. And in the other case, they adopted. And even though both of them initially said, no, we don't, no, we neither of us want children, we'd never adopt, we don't, they did because it was the only way to keep that marriage together. So anyway, look, these are just anecdotal cases. That doesn't in and of itself prove anything. But just I know in your experience in the world, you probably know most women want children. So when I see a woman just dating a guy year after year after year, I get very sad about that, particularly if it's a woman I care about, because I think she's moving further away from what will make her ultimately happy and fulfilled, not closer towards it. And so what is the solution? What's the best thing? What I encourage them to do is to get engaged. Now, the guy usually, I'm not ready to get married. I'm not, and I say, I accept you're not ready to get married, but surely you can't not be ready to get engaged. I mean, after all, what's the difference, right? You see her 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 times a week this way. You'll do the same when you're engaged, but a ring on her finger is an important step. And let me tell you something else, and that is that relationships are organic. They're like plants. And a plant is either growing or dying. It's not doing nothing. Please know that your relationship is either growing or dying. And one of the ways that you condemn your relationship to die is if there is no progress, if there's nothing that makes it grow. And so if you really love her and you love the being with her and you don't know what the future is going to bring, well, she's always very grateful for that because she also sees an engagement as a big step forward. I don't necessarily see it as a big step forward, but I do see it as a big clarification. And I come from the point of view that an engagement is not a big deal. Also, by the way, I encourage people when they get engaged not to go with a big engagement party and lots of presents, because I do recognize that a broken engagement is much, much better than a broken marriage. And so I don't see a big problem with ending an engagement, and I think it better that you make it as unembarrassing as possible. So when you get engaged, you don't know what the future is going to bring. This is a next step in your relationship. It's the logical thing to do, but there's every possibility that the engagement status will expose fault lines in the relationship that were hidden during the boyfriend-girlfriend phase. And that's exactly what I want to see it do. If there are fault lines to be exposed, let's expose them. Let's know now. We certainly don't want you to be boyfriend and girlfriend for another 3 or 4 or 5 or 9 years and waste even more time. No, take that next step. Get engaged, and then we'll see what happens. And if fault lines are exposed and problems emerge, so break the engagement. And now you're free to move on in a way you wouldn't have had you just stayed boyfriend and girlfriend for another 6 months, for another year, for another 2 years. This is a good thing, not a bad thing. And it's easier to do if you don't make a big deal out of the engagement, because that way, you know, you don't have to return presents and you don't have, you just feel less foolish about it. And nobody should feel foolish about breaking an engagement. It's not a big deal. It's not a deal at all. It's nothing. It's no big deal. Break the engagement. It's fine. Really, really fine. Not a problem. And so back to John, who's really unhappy that Jennifer just got engaged to Jack, and meanwhile, Jennifer is his only true love. Okay, so here is the guy code. The guy code, to which, by the way, I do not subscribe. I subscribe to the biblical blueprint, not the guy code. But I know what the guy code is. The guy code is that you definitely do not try and date your buddy's girlfriend. What's more, even if he breaks up with her, there's a real question mark in the guy code whether you can date her. And if you do, there's all kinds of questions. Did you have something to do with a breakup? And do you have to first tell him before you date her? Do you have to go to your buddy and say, listen, I have to sit down and talk with you. I need to know, you know, do you mind? Are you okay with me dating your ex-girlfriend? Okay, now, I don't buy into all of this, okay? I don't see any problem. Now, when I say no problem with dating your buddy's girlfriend, you may well lose his friendship. That may well happen, but you got to decide what's more important to you, right? But how about in this case, where John is distraught that he missed his opportunity with Jennifer, and she got tired of waiting, she went off and married and got engaged to Jack. Now what, Sans? I've just said an engagement status is very little more than a boyfriend-girlfriend status. So what did I advise John to do? I should tell you this, before we go any further, I should tell you that, as I said earlier, everybody tries to contract the best marriage they can. What does that mean for a man? You know, a beautiful girl from a lovely family, a girl of terrific character, a younger girl. All of these things are the things that make sense for a man, and men try to marry the best woman they possibly can. You know, best in what terms? That she's made partner in a law firm? Forget about it. Very few men say, oh, I only want to marry a woman who's made partner in a law firm. That's simply not real. That is not part of how the world really works. As a matter of fact, there are reasons for going the reverse on that. I've covered that in different programs in the past. But You know, is there a guy who says, I only want to marry a woman who can speak four languages? Okay, it's very unusual. I mean, if you're a guy who travels a lot and you have business in different, maybe, I don't know. But overwhelmingly, in general, guys want to marry a girl of great character, nice family, beautiful, young. Those are the things that matter. How about to a woman? What are the things that matter? Good character, you know, nice looking, nice family, and financially capable. Right, that's right there in it, and I think we'd be lying if we didn't put it there. It is right there. Well, it so happened in this case, I think that John behaved abominably. He was foolish. He was really, really. He was just childish. He was a kid, and now I took him at his word that he's really grown up, and that he was utterly shocked and kicked into the next dimension when Jennifer went and left him and got engaged with to somebody else. But from my point of view, now my point of view on this is not relevant. The only people who are relevant are John and Jennifer and Jack. But I think that every woman should try and contract and bring about the best marriage she possibly can in the terms of what makes a good marriage. Like I said, character, a guy with really good character, a guy with a nice family. These are ideals, nice looking and financially secure. It so happens that although I did not know Jack particularly well, I did know that John was the superior man. He really was. For all his foolishness and childishness in letting Jennifer slip through his fingers, he was a superior man. And regardless, I mean, I feel that since an engagement means absolutely nothing, a woman is entitled to make her best choice. Absolutely, her best choice. Whatever she feels is her best choice. But because of my awareness of the two men involved and the fact that I knew Jennifer, I told John the following. I said, look, in my view, if it was me, I'll tell you what I would do. I would call up Jennifer and ask if you can stop by her office or meet her at lunch for a coffee. And it's up to her to decide whether she's going to tell her fiancé, Jack, that you called her or not, but you could say, I have to speak with you, and here's what you should do. You should propose marriage to her. Now, I'll tell you now, Jack is probably never going to forgive you. He'll see it as, if she rejects you, he'll see it as audacious, but he'll probably laugh. If she breaks her engagement with Jack and goes with you, he'll never forgive you. And he said, look, I really don't care. I would pay any price. I would take anything in order to win a battle. I said, well, it's up to you and it's up to her. She, in my view, right, if it was my daughter, she has every right to break an engagement if she wants to for any reason at all. It's painful. It's embarrassing. I know all of those things. But, you know, and she might, but I'll tell you one thing. What you can't do is contact her and say, I'd really like to ask you out on a date. That you can forget about. All you can do is you can say to her, I've been kicking myself for the last 4, 5, 6 weeks, whatever it was, and I can't take this anymore. I cannot go through life without at least knowing I gave this every shot. I want to go down on one knee. Here is a ring. And yes, you do have to have a ring. And I want you to know that I will devote my entire life to being the very best husband to you I can possibly know how. I'm asking you to please break your engagement with Jack and marry me. Okay, and then all you can do is get off your knee and say to her, I will wait to hear from you. If I never hear from you, I'll know what your answer is. And if I do, I will stand by ready to step in to be the very best husband you could ever imagine. That's all you can do. And you probably want to know the answer, right? You probably want to know what happened. Well, I can probably tell you, because although I've changed the names of the story, the story happened more than once. This happened more than once in my role as a congregational rabbi. And so, yeah, this did happen more than once. In the particular case that I had in my mind as I was telling you the story, It was very traumatic. Jack and Jennifer did had an engagement party, and she did break it off, and she did marry John. They are, to this day, happily married and raising a lovely family. They're doing very, very well indeed. And Jack also got over the upset, got over the embarrassment. And yes, it is embarrassing for a man. It really is. But he got over it. And a year later, he got engaged again. And this time he got married to somebody who was really much more suitable in a number of ways, more so than Jennifer was. But that is as much as I feel like sharing in public on this particular show. So there it is, my friends. Thank you very much indeed for being part of today's show. I hope that on a number of levels this was interesting to you, or it might turn out to be interesting and valuable to somebody in your family or in your social circle, that you might be able to convey some of the insights, the most important one being there that one of the ways of moving forward from a boyfriend-girlfriend situation that seems to be going nowhere is get engaged. That's all. Just get engaged. It's not that big a deal, but it does move you onto the next level, which either validates the relationship and allows it to move forward, because it's a much smaller jump from engagement to marriage for reluctant boys than it is from boyfriend-girlfriend to marry. So it's a ledge on the road to the summit, on the path to the summit. It's a place where you can rest and take stock of the situation and evaluate the intensity and the strength of the relationship in the context of this new status, even though in real terms the status has no significance at all. Thanks for being part of the show. Thank you for spreading word on the show. Thank you for making sure you purchase a copy for yourself and a copy as a gift of Business Secrets from the Bible, which you will find at rabbidaniellappin.com, and you'll also find it at any other bookseller. And so that means until our next show, thanks for being part of this one, and I wish you a week of good health and prosperity. God bless.
Spilling ancient solutions for modern problems in the areas of family, faith, friendship, and finance. This is Rabbi Daniel Lappin, on demand on the Blaze Radio Network.